Was the lone wolf behind the New Orleans truck attack actually not trained in killing, but an IT guy? Why did the man who blew up a Tesla truck outside the Trump Tower in Las Vegas first tell a friend on email he was going to Mexico? Why are cars and houses burning in the Pacific Palisades fires, but nearby trees are not? Could the fires raging this past month have been caused not by climate change, but by a patented device? This week on the Global Research News Hour, we are exploring unusual events in January that were explained in the mainstream media, but behind which more questions lie. In our first half hour, we talk to Larry Johnson, a veteran of the CIA and the State Department's Office of Counterterrorism, about lingering questions he has about the attacks in New Orleans and in Las Vegas on New Year's Day, and indications that the FBI and the Las Vegas police force were deliberately lying about certain aspects of each case, and about some similarities the two actors have with each other. Next, in our second half hour, we are joined by the botanist and forensic arborist Robert Brame, who noted some of the odd properties of the fires currently burning toward Los Angeles. Finally, Ilana Freeland, the writer and specialist on the deep state and geoengineering, presents an alternative explanation of the fires and reveals plans for this technology going way beyond arson. On this week's program, January 2025, the era of false flags, the New Year's Day terrorist attacks, and more climate change fires near LA. Bringing you the analysis beyond the media headlines, the Global Research News Hour is on the air. Welcome to the Global Research News Hour for the week of January 31st, 2025. The program is funded by the Center for Research on Globalization and produced in collaboration with campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. I'm your host, Michael Welch. The show seeks to provide listeners with access to analysis of some of the major issues shaping our world today from thinkers, researchers, and unique political personalities rarely addressed by major media. Our shows are available to partner radio stations across Canada and the United States and available for streaming or download at the site globalresearch.ca. We acknowledge that this program was produced on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe, the Ininu, the Ojibwe, the Dene, and the Dakota, the birthplace of the Métis Nation, the heart of the Métis Nation homeland. Indigenous people suffered loss of land and resources due to false promises and broken treaties, and endured colonialism and genocide as a result. The descendants of the European settlers who made those promises should reflect on the price of the bounty and work toward reparations and reconciliation so that we could attain a more respectful partnership moving forward. Now it's time for News Notes, a sampling of articles from the Global Research News site. Listeners should know that some of the articles may run against common messaging about sensitive subjects and are not all endorsed by this radio station. A ceasefire invariably constitutes a first step towards a peace agreement. In the case of Gaza, the objective is, quote, a pause, unquote, in what constitutes a carefully planned genocide, of which the, quote, end game, unquote, is the exodus of Palestinians from their homeland. U.S. NATO are indelibly behind the genocide project. President Trump has pressured both Jordan and Egypt to facilitate the immigration of Palestinians. From a propaganda standpoint, the ceasefire's intent is to mislead public opinion. That comes from the article, Israel's, quote, fake ceasefire, unquote, a, quote, unquote, pause, genocide, exodus of Palestinians from their homeland, by Professor Michel Chosudovsky, posted January 30th. The latest election win secures another 5 years for Lukashenko, which means stability for Belarus at least until 2030. The country's Central Election Commission declared that the incumbent got 86.82% of the vote, although there are several reports that it's actually even higher, standing at 87.6%. Obviously, expecting what the reactions from the political West would be, Lukashenko preemptively ridiculed them with remarks such as the one that Belarus is a, quote,
dictatorship of order, kindness, and justice, unquote. We will preserve the most important things, the dictatorship of order, justice, kindness, and respect for people, first of all, for laboring people, he stated. This is indeed his seventh term since he took office in 1994. That comes from the article, EU-NATO's Impotent Rage as President Lukashenko Secures Another Victory for Belarus, by Drago Bosnik, posted January 30th, originally published on InfoBricks. This analysis should help implement the principle that we need to know where we came from in order to best assess where we should be headed. It is pretty much a given that some big and powerful agencies will do their best to do the opposite, to point us in the wrong direction towards objectives to further empower the powerful and further enrich the rich at the expense of everyone else. Canada is not now a part of the United States because there was a portion of North America's population who opted not to become part of the Revolutionary Republic. Many United Empire loyalists of North America left the newly created United States. They migrated to the remaining crown lands north of the new border with the United States. That comes from the article, Canada is Older Than the USA, Anthony J. Hall, by Professor Anthony J. Hall, posted January 30th, originally published on Looking Out at the World from Canada. It didn't take long for President Trump to reveal his plans for the Gaza solution. It can start right after, or even better, during the ceasefire, which he claims having brokered in Doha. Well, what a ceasefire. You may as well call it, quote, planned ethnic cleansing, unquote. Push them out, the Gaza population, those about 1.5 million still alive and left lingering in the ruins of Gaza, into Egypt's tent cities in the Sinai, built by Egypt with U.S. money and a little coercing by the International Monetary Fund, or IMF, for some clean IMF debt to erase Egypt's gigantic natural debt. That comes from the article, President Trump Reveals His Agenda for Ethnic Cleansing of Gaza, by Peter Koenig, posted January 29th.
These are just a few of the featured articles appearing last week on the Global Research website. Regular visitors to the site are encouraged to send monetary contributions by fax, mail, or online. Just go to globalresearch.ca and click Donate on the menu bar.
With all the news pouring out of the airwaves in the past month, it's easy to forget two violent incidents that took place right on New Year's Day. One was a former member of the U.S. Army driving a pickup truck into a crowd and killing several in New Orleans. The other was a Tesla truck blowing up outside the Trump Tower in Las Vegas. Both were investigated by the FBI, and they concluded that they were both acts of terrorism. One was a member of ISIS, the other an individual suffering from PTSD and other mental case elements. But on closer examination, we find that there are major flaws in what the FBI are telling us about each incident, and we are forced to the conclusion that the FBI is lying to us, at least about some aspects of the story. It is vital that we come to grips with this information, as it may someday speak to even higher crimes and the reliability of organizations duly appointed to get to the bottom of matters of this nature. Well, Larry Johnson is one person raising plenty of red flags about the facts as the FBI and the media tells them. Larry C. Johnson is a former CIA officer and intelligence analyst and a former planner and advisor at the U.S. State Department's Office of Counterterrorism. As an independent contractor, he was provided training for the U.S. military special operations community for 24 years. And in 2024, Larry addressed the United Nations Security Council and attended the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. He appears regularly on various news sites, video blogs, and independent online channels, including Sputnik, RT, Judging Freedom, Redacted, and The Duran, among others. Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour, Larry.
Thank you, Michael.
Now, it seems as if these two incidents are connected in that they involved U.S. Army personnel, not foreigners, for one thing. I know you have largely focused on the Las Vegas attack in particular, and I will let you get to that incident in a minute. But first, talk a little about the New Orleans and the driver, Jabbar, who drives into a crowd, killing 15 and injuring 30. They found an ISIS flag in the trunk of his car. What are the key signals for you about what is wrong with this account?
Well, let's start first with what I call the spurious connections. So, the spurious connection number one is that both individuals are alleged to have been at Fort Bragg together, now called Fort Liberty. Well, Fort Bragg is an enormous base, number one. But then you have to look at who were these respective individuals. And Jabbar was a human resources guy. He was an admin weenie, and somebody would sit in front of a computer. Somebody would process orders. He was not one trained to kill. He wasn't trained to build bombs. He wasn't trained to handle explosives in any way. He wasn't trained to do surveillance or carry out ambushes. They had zero training on that. Quite the contrast from Leivelsberger or Livesberger, who was Tesla blew up out in Las Vegas. He was a Special Forces, a Green Beret, and as such, an 18-year career, he was extensively trained with explosives and a whole variety of things. So, just the fact that they had spent time at Fort Bragg doesn't necessarily mean anything because it's not clear that they were th there at the same time. And it's certainly there's zero evidence that they were part of, say, the John F. Kennedy School for Special Operations.
Just a second. Just you mentioned that the Jabbar, I guess he was an IT guy and he hadn't gotten that formal training. But I mean, is it possible he could have gotten it in his spare time, away from the view of the military itself? I don't know. Like, is that
Well,
B or something?
not likely.
Okay.
If he got it, it would have been, he'd be a danger to himself and to others. He, clearly, he was a danger to others. The thing that caught my attention was he built two improvised explosive devices that were contained in coolers that he carried around and left in certain locations, and they were to be detonated remotely. That's very sophisticated. That's not something that some guy searching the internet for the terrorist cookbook comes up with. So that to me suggests he had support, he had help, he had assistance. He was also described as not being financially sound. And so where did he get the money to move to New Orleans? And he bought, he was renting or buying a fairly, significant piece of real estate. So there's just, a lot of odd things that just on the surface don't appear to add up. And then on top of it, he wasn't, the flag was actually attached to the tailgate of his car. So he's flying this black ISIS flag, except it's upside down. So, he didn't even, he did, you know, he's, suddenly a fanatical member of ISIS, but can't read Arabic and doesn't know up from down with respect to the Arabic language. So they've buttoned up, they've gone, dead silent in terms of who was he in contact with? How did he become radicalized? What was he, who is he communicating with? Hopefully now with President Trump in office, we'll get some answers. But Jabbar is certainly it's a mystery on that front. With respect to Leivelsberger, or AKA Matt Berg, I don't think that qualifies as a terrorist attack. It was the different narratives coming out about it are he clearly he died in the explosion that took place. The what's so odd about all of this, and maybe he was having a mental breakdown, because this is a guy who could build a sophisticated explosive device, and instead of that, he built a very crude thing that you would, anticipate some 16, 17-year-old kid would throw together, with using a lot of, gasoline, fuel oils. The problem I have with this story that was told, not so much by the initially, I thought it was the FBI, but then it was actually the Las Vegas Police Department took the lead in the investigation and kept the lead in the investigation. So the FBI never got involved, which is in a way sort of odd as well, because this guy traveled across different state lines. So, and he claimed he had information, had violated a, his secrecy agreement, and that he was headed to Mexico. He was trained in counter surveillance. He was trained. There's an element within the special forces within the Green Beret community they call Jedbirds. The Jedbird is comes out of a World War II entity that was part of the Office of Strategic Services and British Intelligence Special Operations Executive. And it was basically an a multinational team for carrying out sabotage. We'd call it terrorist attacks. That, but terrorism's always in the eye of the beholder, and so he had that kind of training. So he then sent out some curious, it's not confirmed that they were his emails, but in these email communications that he knew, he said he was being followed. And so, if you know you're being followed and being monitored, the last thing you want to do is be on your cell phone and have your cell phone on so you can be located, and to rent a Tesla, which, does everything but talk to God,
Right.
in terms of sharing information about where you are, what you're doing, and where you're going, including filming things. There's that oddity. That what he said in his emails, he didn't do actually in real life. He said he was going to Mexico. He didn't go to Mexico. He went to Las Vegas. So I mean, you could argue. He said, "Well, Las Vegas sounds Mexican," but
Yeah, I guess with his knowledge of explosives, he'd know that what he had in his car would not be enough to do much damage to this building at all, right?
yeah, no, that wouldn't do it. Minimal damage at best, just cosmetic damage. It wouldn't affect the structural integrity. So he, clearly his goal was not to blow up the building. Then the other thing is I guess he had just recently bought a 50 caliber Desert Eagle. Excuse me, I'm getting ready to sneeze here. Okay, it passed, and it didn't. Okay. This is literally a hand cannon. Now, the Las Vegas Police Department claimed that he shot himself before detonating the car. And you're going, how does that work? But the video that was provided, you could actually see his head, and you did not see him holding a gun, say in his right hand, pointed up into his mouth with this 50 caliber gun, because candidly, it would have taken off most of his head. So it just that didn't make sense. Why were they giving that explanation that they found, they claimed that they re found when they did a autopsy, they recovered a bullet from his head. Well, that's impossible too. If you shoot yourself in the head with a 50 caliber, that thing's going through your head. So it's just some just the story doesn't add up. He clearly though in his writings was a Trump supporter, not a Trump opponent. And He had been, he was also, this was the other sort of very strange thing. He was still listed as currently assigned on active duty to a base outside of Stuttgart. It's called Panzer.
Yeah.
I've been there two or three times myself over the course of my consulting career with the military. But it's not the kind of base that like where Gomer Pyle had a barracks and was marching around, and they had a mess hall, and this is more sort of it was a small facility. So he was just assigned there from an admin standpoint. It looks like he was actually carrying out operations in Ukraine, and likely operations in tandem with the Central Intelligence Agency. So, why he decided to come back and then go into this whole, create this whole backstory and drama, and then kill himself essentially. And he didn't kill anybody else. And it was all fortunate that there were people standing outside, and maybe he deliberately chose that moment when he could see there was nobody outside.
Wow.
So, but I do not believe that these were connected incidents in any way.
Yeah, well, they're also. I mean, they, the, in spite of this explosive going off, and I mean, I don't think that it was easy to determine by visually like what his identity was, but he had ID really available that was in perfect condition. I mean, that almost sounds like a similar theme whenever you have any sort of kind of clandestine type activity is so as you can identify him.
Yeah, it was singed. His CAC, what they call CAC, CAC card was singed, but it was still legible. Yeah, but, for the kind of fire, it's surprising that that didn't get consumed. Or melt more, because it's a plastic card.
And they were able to track his DNA as well to determine he was who they say they were. See?
Well, I mean, by virtue of being in the army, in particular in special forces, they had records of his DNA, because in the event that he gets killed in combat, gets blown up with an artillery shell. If they're piecing, taking, picking up pieces off the battlefield, they got to try to figure out whose piece belongs to whom. So that's not unusual, and the developments in DNA technology today are such that you can get results within minutes. Once you have a sample, you can literally have it within minutes.
I mean, I know that you have all these like loose ends and red flags and so on suggesting the FBI is lying, but I mean, given everything that's come forward, including an email suggesting that from Leibelsberger suggesting that there was the Chinese had plans of sending U not UFOs but well drones over the White House or something to that effect. Why is the FBI adequate trying to either deceive the public or try to conceal something that implicates them? I mean, well, what aspects do you have about what the broader implications could be?
The one I find most concerning, and it was, we had other evidence of this in the reaction, particular to the Leibelsberger. Is there are some, there's one in particular, a woman, a former CIA officer, who is out spreading this nonsense that there are all these secret Islamic Al-Qaeda cells, terrorist cells in the country, just waiting for the word to start launching their attacks. Part, so what I think is going on is it's an actual information operation, would tied into, people like Welch, using people like Welch to carry out these incidents to actually sow, create an atmosphere or an environment where people will believe that the threat of terrorism is pervasive, and that you'll be open to allowing the government to take more extreme actions and cracking down on anybody that is perceived as, quote, a threat. And I'm caught by the sort of the irony that when this thing happened with Jabbar in New Orleans, yeah, the nation was sort of transfixed by it. But I was just reading some newspaper articles out of New York City. The attacks on the subways are horrific, and they're happening on a daily basis. And it's like, well, no big deal.
Wow.
So that's why I say this is they when these situ when the attack like what Jabbar did in New Orleans is used to whip up a, let's call it a political narrative. Now, do I believe that we've got a threat from having, being flooded with these illegal migrants? Absolutely. I don't think we've actually got the real story of what was behind this, but there was a lot of money flowing to it out of the US government making this happen. And we're just we're not getting a good picture of what's going on. Now, I think the Trump coming into office is really shaking things up. And particularly the raids that are being carried out right now on illegal migrants who've been involved with drug activity, gang activity, criminal activity, that they're being rounded up and tossed. I think that's going to have an effect. We'll see. I'm always skeptical of these narratives, in particular this one woman who's, she was tying Hamas together with Al Qaeda. And yet, step back and look at what the CIA has actually been doing. And in the last 2 months, the CIA was actively involved in providing finance, training, and material support to this guy named Al-Jalani, the head of Hayat al-Tahrir al-Sham, HTS. They were listed since 2017 in the State Department's annual report on terrorism. It used to be called Patterns of Global Terrorism. Now it's Country Reports on Terrorism. But they were listed as the top 10 most active terrorist groups. And yet we get involved with backing them to overthrow Assad.
Yeah, now he's in
And
charge.
so we've got clear, there's clear evidence of our intelligence community being involved with ISIS. Remember, Jake Sullivan sent an email to Hillary back in 2012, 13 years ago,
Yeah.
saying, "Hey, yeah, ISIS, we're all on the same side. ISIS and us, we're on the same side." So we've worked together with them. So that's why I'm always suspect when we trot out I'm not denying that ISIS is a threat, but what I'm saying is we're very loose in our handling of that threat because at times we get in bed with these guys.
Well, Larry Johnson, I thank you very much for this analysis. We should probably, if anything new develops, I'm sure we'll get back in touch and get more information. Thank you so much for this analysis.
Hey, Michael, you're most welcome. Thanks for entertaining me.
Larry C. Johnson is a former CIA officer and intelligence analyst and a frequent commentator. You can check out his site at sonar21.com.
You're listening to the Global Research News Hour, broadcasting from CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg and from partnering radio stations across Canada and the United States.
So we have someone who can point to evidence contradicting established narratives about the Pacific Palisades fires burning now for over 20 days. His name is Robert Brame. He's a botanist and a forensic arborist who's been studying plants in nature with science plant books in hand for nearly half a century, and he's been a mountain climber and has cooked on campfires for about the same amount of time. He looked at the evidence of the recent forest fires in California and found the pattern was vastly different from what is evident in traditional forest fires. Robert Braid, it is a pleasure having you on the Global Research NewsHour. Welcome to the show.
Oh, well, it's nice to be on here. Thank you very much.
Some scientists have been trying to correct what they call conspiracy theories about what caused the fires to spread. Some of them say that people naturally feel the need to point to an explanation they can understand. Hence, it was created by humans. Do you think this might be one element of the dissenting perspective you are talking about, or you know, are they just way off base?
Well, if you're talking about supposed arsonists lighting these fires, I think that rarely happens. I'm not ruling it out, but I believe that's rarely happens because these are not the same flames.
Well, you mentioned the fires that you witnessed way back in Northern California, Santa Rosa area, about in 2017. It got you questioning what really happened because of the strange phenomenon you witnessed. Briefly, if you could you mention a few of the phenomena you witnessed that were not consistent with the heat from conventional fires and the damage they do to everything in its path?
Yeah, why, sure. When I first saw the pictures up there, and I noticed 4,700 homes had turned to white ash, and there was no black, no carbon anywhere. And the photos I saw on the internet, I saw trees everywhere, all kinds of species, unburned, untouched. So when I went up there and started analyzing this place, I found plastics around the yards, such as children's play structures, plastic swimming pools above ground, rubber garden hoses, trampolines, synthetics, all untouched unless there's metal in close proximity. And then, of course, when I get into the trees, more of my expertise, I notice the trees that hold the most water, especially your extreme water levers that just are filled with water, the willow, cottonwood, alder, birch, aspen, even the maples, madrones, and the oak trees. Oak trees hold a ton of water. They're burning from the inside out. First of all, these trees are very, very wet. There's no reason for a flame to be burning the middles out and leaving the leaves untouched. They may be brown or light shade of green, but they're not burned up, no matter what species I look at. Unless, of course, they're right next to metals, like a home, and I mean close, 10 feet or closer. The rest are not burning up. And then when you get into the coniferous trees, the pines, spruce, fir, larch, things like that, cedars, they should be burning up, and they're not. And they are cooking from the inside out, but at a much slower rate because they don't have that liquidy, watery juice in them. It's more sappy. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the sap, that sap in a pine ignites just under 200 degrees, and they're not burning up like they normally should. Pine needles touching the ground, and the flames refuse to ignite them. And the same goes with your eucalyptus genus. Most combustible leaves I know of, you can light them on fire with a small campfire very easily. It's one of my fire starters when I'm camping around the lowlands. But that sums up most of it. Everything that should burn doesn't, and everything that is burning shouldn't be burning. So, and I'm finding that every aftermath I go to.
So you mentioned something like the watery areas that have water going through them that burns up?
Yeah, somehow it heats up very quickly and ignites and burns these trees from the inside out, which generally happens only in the oldest trees. We see it a lot in fruit trees because we cut them in half, prune them drastically, and they hollow out over 10 to 40 years. They just hollow out. But not these adult trees that have 100% leaves all over them. There's no dieback on them, yet they're hollowed out, and they fall over, and you'll see them burn from the inside out all the way down into the roots and subterranean roots everywhere, burned out, and the trees fall over.
Yeah.
And many of these places are in short grass where it's cattle country. Range cattle are out there, and it's September, October. They eat the grass down to, 2 to 4 inches. It's gone. There's not enough combustible material left to warrant burning these things up, even burning up the leaves. So that's what's happening. The trees that hold the most water are the ones that burn first, not last.
Yeah, well, it sounds like the same kind of pattern as when I put food in a microwave oven. That it's because it's not the heat from the coils that are going into it. It's like you say, the water and the fat inside heats up, and that's the source of what cooks it. And you also mentioned how metal also gets charged.
And
that's what happens in the microwave oven as well. Is essentially the same kind of pattern? Is it are yeah. essentially a forest being put inside a microwave oven?
That's the closest I would equate it to. The metals are on fire, whether they're ferrous or non-ferrous, like your vehicles. Aluminum rims or alloy rims are all melting out without exception. Every car I've seen in 7 years, if they're alloys or aluminum, they're melted out, and they'll keep flowing in a liquid state perhaps 20 feet from a vehicle on pavement, and there's nothing out there to keep it liquefied. It should be cooling off rapidly, but it doesn't. It just keeps on going.
Mm.
And, of course, your windows, too, your auto glass melting at 2,500 degrees. And that's only the starting point. Perhaps it goes up to 27 or even 3,000 degrees. And the windows are melting out, and that's every vehicle I've seen in 7 years, with no exceptions.
Hmm. And I guess you'd say that the fire is currently burning in like right now in the Palisades. That is the same pattern that you've discovered so far?
Yes, every large fire in Southern California, I've seen all the pictures on the internet, the same thing. Trees are virtually untouched, and homes are turned to white ash. And I see plastics. You see the plastic garbage cans, the recycle bins in the street. If you get there quick enough and get in there, you'll find all this material that's untouched. But if they don't let you in for the fear of safety, your safety, they bring trucks in at some point and take everything off your property because they don't want the evidence of materials that were unburned that should have burned. And I'm seeing this everywhere. If I get in there quick enough, I find materials everywhere, even paper and plastic and cardboard. Synthetic flags, they won't burn.
Yeah. I know that, I mean, you know all of the, you've burned every kind of wood that's out there, the redwoods, the Douglas firs and so on.
Sure.
And so forth. And you could, even before you go on the scene, you could say, okay, this is how they should burn. And then you're seeing a totally different pattern, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I've backpacked, from sea level to 14,000 feet, and timberline can be up to 12,000 feet in some of the higher Sierra areas. I've burned everything just throughout the state. I know what burns and what doesn't. And even in a standard normal wood fire that we know of, oak trees don't burn. Their leaves are fire retardant. There's too much water in them. There's not enough dead wood in them to warrant flames. If they're short, in the brush areas, they'll burn along with the other more combustible shrubs. But take the flame away, they go out. Oak trees don't burn up. And all the conifers, I've burned them all. Mostly it's the pine family. And there's also incense cedar and red cedar in California. I've burned everything. 50 yeah. years of this.
Well.
Or even things that shouldn't be in the fire, I've tried to burn them. And in a little campfire, I can burn any leaf in California in 1 minute. If I have a little campfire going, it doesn't matter what the leaf is. And I'm seeing horrific firestorms in the leaves are not burned, or seldom. It's seldom.
Well, I checked through Snopes.com for the facts they say about the Pacific
palisades, so-called conspiracy theories, and they touched on a report by University of California Agriculture and Natural Resources, which said even in cases of severe fire behavior and high tree mortality, most trees are not completely consumed, and the main trunk will remain standing, although the leaves, needles, and branches may be gone. I don't know, how do you respond to scientific reports like that?
Well, like that sounds correct, because I've been on some normal fires in the High Sierra, and the poles are left. The bole of the tree, limbless, maybe a few limbs, holes through the trunk. That's in a firestorm, that's what's left, the main trunk. And it might not be 100 feet tall. It might be 40 feet tall now, or even a stump. It will really burn well because of the sap inside. And limbless, and they don't leave needles. That would be your number one combustible material for any forest fire, is the needles. And, of course, all the mulch on the ground, all the leaves that build up over, you know, so many years.
Have you tried to bring these issues to the attention of the general public? I mean, beyond, you know, podcasts and such. I mean, have you talked to any major press about it?
Major press, none. I wouldn't. They're told not to listen to me, I'm sure of it. They like hearing the lies of the media. Very few firemen understand what I talk about. They don't have the background I do. A few fire captains like John Lord and Matt Dakin, the two 30-year fire captains that analyzed Santa Rosa and Paradise, they became fast friends, and they understand everything, all the technology used. We became fast friends. The media has done its job. The six media giants has brainwashed everybody to believe their narrative, their false narrative. The real conspiracy is everything out of their mouth. They can't, they can question me, but it's just misinformation coming from their mouth, not mine. I've studied this for way too long.
So given your inability to find an explanation for what you've seen in nature, is there any human invention that you may be aware of that might have produced this sort of outcome?
I would just be guessing at that. Some types of laser technology is the closest I would come up with, but it's just a wild guess. We have all that weaponry in the Navy and the Air Force and different branches of military. They have all kinds of different laser type weapons. They're even advertised on YouTube, and you see all the videos with the Athena laser and the trillion watt laser, which was developed less than 20 miles from my house. But it's all guesswork. We have no idea exactly what they're building and what they're using against the citizens.
I next connected with Ilana Freeland. She is a writer, ghost writer, lecturer, storyteller, and teacher who researches and writes on deep state issues, including the stories of survivors of MKUltra ritual abuse and invasive electromagnetic weapons. She has written a trilogy on the topic of geoengineering, and her fourth book, The Geoengineered Transhuman, The Hidden Technologies of HARP, Chemtrails, 5G, 6G, Nanotechnology, Synthetic Biology, and the Scientific Effort to Transform Humanity, comes out next week. I asked her for her opinion on what had happened in the fires near Los Angeles.
Listen to Mr. Brahm, the arborist, and I'd listened before to him. He's very good. He talks about how the trees are burning from the inside out. And he talks about how the fact that metals are on fire, which is strange, and that the pool of liquid remains even after the warm factor is less, how windows are melting in automobiles and homes are really turned entirely to white ash. So, you know, these are things that are not about wildfires. They're not about forest fires. They're not about arson. You can't do this with arson. What is happening is coming from the sky. And it's called a directed energy weapon, and I thought I would read from this. This is a patent US 10337841B2 of a directed energy weapon.
So it actually exists. There's no controversy there.
No. It's a device that directs a beam of high energy content toward a target for incapacitating or destroying the target, the high energy beam being a laser beam, causing structural damage to the target. Okay, so this is called the blue laser patent, by the way, and those who talk about the blue roofs, etc., that's exactly what this patent is about, is a particular frequency of patent of a laser that produces a certain quality of destruction. So there were a couple of things that happened during that time. The January 7 fires, and they went on from there for several days in Los Angeles. That was 23 fires, last I checked. It was interesting on January 16 how SpaceX, Elon Musk's SpaceX, launched its Starship Flight 7 with a, quote, test payload deployment of Starlink simulators with 160 gigabytes for uplink and 1 terabyte for downlink. This happens to be more tech, 10 times the amount than the downlink and 24 times the uplink capacity of the V2 mini Starlink satellites. In other words, it looks like on that date, that was January 16, that's several days after the January 7 beginning of the fires in Los Angeles, seems like they needed more communication regarding the quantity of what was going on with the satellites, what was being broadcast from the satellite. My guess is what was being broadcast from the satellite was indeed a laser, and that it was busy creating plasma in our skies. Our skies are intensely ionized, and what that basically means is there, because of the U.S. military's control over the ionosphere, we are able to keep our sky ionized as long as we have these jets flying with the so-called chemtrails and spreading particulates in the air all 24/7.
And so basically you're saying that all this activity that is being generated in the ionosphere, they're leaving fingerprints behind, right?
Not fingerprints. No, we're actually grabbing ions from the ionosphere. And we can target anywhere in the world to a postage stamp with those ions. And so this is a massive weapon system. And so in the fire, I mentioned Elon Musk's preparation of something on the 16th of January. And then at the same time, his name is George Webb, a wonderful investigative journalist, really goes right to the place where he's writing about instead of sitting in his armchair. And he talked about how the Pacific Palisades fire was due to a fire live exercise, military style, called a SIMEX, which stands for simulation exercise. They set that up right there in Palisades, and it was considered an exercise by probably most everyone who was involved in it, but was far from an exercise. And to do that, they would have needed an AI partner. And George posits that it was a company called DeepSeek AI. So, you know, these institutions, the whole thing of geoengineering is a massive industry making piles of money for some corporations and some deep pockets. And it's important for us to, we're going to have to go beyond waiting to be spoon-fed the news as to these very secret projects. Now, how it works, I want to spend most of my time on that. I have a few more minutes, I hope.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going 1,000 miles an hour. I apologize.
You're doing okay.
And so Let's start with the Death Star. I mentioned it, Tesla. Everyone knows, I assume, that Mr. Trump, Donald Trump, is the nephew of a man named John Trump, who was an electrical engineer at the time that Nikola Tesla was died and all of his research stolen by our FBI. All of that research, anything that was hands-on or all of the documents that were then available, this is pre-electronic era, in 1943, all of that was passed to John Trump. He became a very famous person, very important person, because he was the turnkey by which you could understand and get access to Tesla technology. And that's what this whole program is, this geoengineering that serves the secret space program that Elon Musk and Mr. Trump are so committed to now to go to Mars, et cetera. So the Death Star, which is basically, it has to be the HARP, High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project up in Gokona, Alaska, a very impressive phased array antenna, ionospheric heater that was capable of being used to determine control over the entire ionosphere, which begins about 50 miles up above our planet and surrounds our planet. It's a sort of way to protect it from the solar extremes. And instead, all of this has now been weaponized, including the ionosphere. So what I want you to get from this one piece I'm quoting from in the book, in the chapter which has to do with entirely with the fires, geoengineered fires, is that a certain type of mirror has been developed. It's called an LDAL, laser-developed atmospheric lens. And with this, it works as a high-powered Fresnel lens to concentrate low-powered light into a tightly focused beam to ignite fires and burn cars like a mean little kid with a magnifying glass trained on a hill of ants. With high-pulsed lasers, portions of Earth's atmosphere are changed into a lens-like plasma mirror that magnify or change the path of electromagnetic light. Our new constantly ionized air means these space-based lasers that are managed from satellites are multi-purpose and able to create deflector shields for defense and magnifying lenses for assault, or even blue beam phantom images, which some of you have heard of blue beam. So that is a done deal. That's been up and running for at least 40 years. And then I want to read this that I write. First of all, let's quote Greg Reese with his wonderful 5-minute videos. I love that series. He did one called the CCP Satellites Over Maui at Times of Fire, September 4, 2023. And he said, the most efficient way to ignite a fire on the surface of the Earth from a satellite in Earth orbit would be to paint the target in segments by pulsing the laser with an advanced targeting system. Fired from a satellite, the Earth's atmosphere will absorb and scatter some of the laser energy. And so the laser would need to be in a wavelength range that minimizes this. The most effective wavelength would be the near-infrared range, invisible to the eye. It would also have a minimal reaction with objects colored blue on the Earth's surface. There's the answer to the blue roofs. The power of the laser would need to be in the hundreds of kilowatts range. And so the calculations on a 10-megawatt laser firing from Earth orbit, assuming that the atmosphere loss amounts to 50% of the overall power and only 5 megawatts reaches the surface as a 1 square meter beam, it would ignite a fire almost instantly. If this 50 megawatt beam was pulsed, across a 1 meter by 1 mile long area in segments, then the time to ignite the entire area would be roughly 2.7 minutes.
Yeah.
So note there, that was a description of the Maui fire. And you remember how it went along the beach, basically, and was really narrow. And Maui's very, very small. I've been to Maui. But compare that with L.A., where you have miles of Los Angeles, miles spread out. It's well known for that. Mm-hmm. So you need something a little more juicy in order to do an area like that. So now I read this. Citizen eyewitness accounts from drone footage and cell phone cameras have been invaluable in terms of recording the sequence of these wildfire events that proves they follow a pattern that is not wild at all. Beginning up to 3 days in advance with jets and drones strafing the sky over the target zone with nano metal alloys, sensors, and chemicals to determine the indices of refraction necessary for the operation. Ignition of nanoswarm brigades in the chemtrailed air and already in the drought compacted soil may precede the laser ignition from the heavens of the actual wildfires. As ignition occurs, onlookers may or may not see the telltale shaft of blue light. Thanks to power lines, underground fiber optic cables, nearby microwave towers, and iPhones and cars acting as conductors and antennas, a microwave energy field is created right there in the sky, and plasma fires can be ignited like they are combusting, like they are bombed. So that's the answer to the people who keep not bothering me, but bothering other people I know about how you cannot create plasma in the atmosphere. That is absolutely not true, because our entire atmosphere, those clouds that you look up at, the clouds that become cloud cover, all the way to the puffy clouds that look like, you know, the old clouds of many years ago. These are all plasma clouds. These are not the clouds that nature used to make with water vapor and particulates. That is not happening anymore. It is as though we live in a circuit board contrived atmosphere now. And you can't see it because you're ignorant of this technology. That's why I've written four. I can't believe I've written four books about this.
Yeah.
Why have I written four books? Because this is the biggest, most nasty elephant in the living room. And hardly anyone knows about it. They've done, the CIA and its friends have done a fabulous job in covering it up in broad day. And and we must learn about this technology so we're prepared for these events that have only just begun as they decide that they need a smart city here and they want more of the particular kind of ash, the sulfur in the ash of these fires. They want it up in the stratosphere. This is planetary engineering with a vendetta. And the human cost is not on their minds at all.
That was Ilana Freeland, writer on geoengineering, providing an alternative argument for the Pacific Palisades fires. And that's it for the program. Tune in next week for a conversation about some of the military upheavals around the world centered around the black population. You're listening to the Global Research News Hour, a program funded by the Center for Research on Globalization and produced in collaboration with campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on the traditional lands of the Anishinaabe, Ininu, Oji-Cree, Dene, and Dakota, the birthplace of the Métis Nation in the heart of the Métis Nation homeland. The show airs on partner radio stations across Canada and the United States and is available for streaming or download at the site globalresearch.ca. To leave feedback on this program, please email globalresearchnewshour@gmail.com. I've been your host, Michael Welch. Thanks once again for joining us.